Table Talk is not your typical D&D TTRPG podcast. We are not here to run you through our whole campaign.
We're here to talk about everything else in the space of Table Talk roleplay.
I'm your host, Alejandra Wilhelm.
And I'm also your host, Mariah Gresham.
And we're your tabletop roleplay girlies.
Alrighty, and we are live with another episode of Table Talk. We are joined today by a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell the people where they can find you?
I would absolutely love to. Thank you.
You're welcome.
First, thank you for having me. this is up. We're done.
I would actually like to leave. Thank you. Bye.
Mystery guest.
So I am Dennis. You can find me all over the internet at OKSDM. My social handles where they allow underscores is OKist underscore underscore DM. Otherwise, it's OKSDM. Fortunately, I was able to snag all of those on all the bigger social media platforms. I started out doing YouTube. That's where most of my following is. And you can find that OKSDM. And that is a channel where I make mistakes running games so you don't have to. It's sort of fallen by the wayside a little bit in favor of creating sagas, which is an acronym for setting and genre agnostic system. If you haven't heard about it, you must be like living under some sort of very large rock because it's been pushing marketing for like the last 2 months. And 2 weeks ago, we funded our Kickstarter. And that was very, very exciting.
Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what rock people are under because like your stuff, even before I met you, I was like seeing sagas all over the place. Yeah.
Same.
That's not by mistake. You tried like, very hard like, to make sure it appeared on your phone.
See, I've been beating these streets.
Yeah, but let's talk a little bit about sagas. And like, first of all, I want to know how you got started with even endeavoring on that project and what kind of inspired you to get going.
So sagas, a lot like many of the other indie games that we're seeing in this sort of TTRPG renaissance right now, originally the concept came to me that, you know, I'm going to design a game. That started in January of 2023, which I'm sure will go down in history in our little niche as, you know, our apocalyptic scare during the OGL crisis.
Yes.
The Y2K of TTRPGs.
Yeah, exactly. I like that.
Where we were all like, okay, where are we migrating to? Is anyone RSVP'd somewhere?
Exactly. And like everyone, myself included, started looking around at like, okay, there are other games like Dungeons and Dragons that do other things and do them well. Let's make a list of those games and see what I'd like to try out. And, you know, 2 days into that mindset, I had an infinitely long list and I was never going to complete all of them. There were so many games I wanted to try. There was, you know, I thought the cyberpunk setting was super cool. I took a look at One Ring, the Lord of the Rings TTRPG. A whole bunch of these Powered by the Apocalypse ones, Kids on Bikes, Kids on Brooms, Monster Hearts, all that stuff. And I started thinking, you know what if there was like a game that was easy to learn and could do all of these stories, like maybe not as well as the original games do, but like still do it well enough where we could have a good time telling them. And before I realized that not only were there games that did this, they're like universal systems, you know, GURPS, Cypher System, Fate, you know, there's so many pretty popular ones that already do this that I had never heard about. I dove headfirst into designing my own and I quickly discovered it was a bottomless pit and I never looked back.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We've talked to a couple of people that have designed their own TTRPGs and we've toyed around with the idea of that being a future project at some point. But it's always interesting. A light teaser for like 3 years from now, probably.
Yeah. guys, it's a really long process. Like, it's been over a year now, and we just have the money to start actually putting things. It's a long thing. It's a long haul.
A year to like turn around a game is insane. Like that progress and the timetable, that is wildly impressive. With like how
quick you've been able to do it. You know, nose to the grindstone the whole time. And I think one thing that really helps with that, you know, insanely quick timetable of a game is done in like a year, 2 years, is that it's only like 50 pages long. Like that's the whole thing.
Being short
really, really helped, especially since it's like me and my editor and nobody else.
Y'all in a dark room.
A two-man squad in a dream. We know nothing about that.
Honestly, exactly.
Three raccoons in a trench coat.
Now it's three raccoons in a trench coat. Shout out to our
editor.
It is not
three raccoons in a... Yep, shout out to Karen. The raccoon has gotten a little bit taller. It's now even slightly.
The raccoon's got Louis Vuitton's on now. It's cool. Yes. But yeah, in those conversations that we've had, it's funny that you mentioned like that you kind of ran down and created a list of like never ending things. And like, I think we spoke to Ryan who made Perils and Princesses. Mm-hmm. And that was like the first thing he said. It was like, the way I started was just by making fucking lists of all the things that he needed to include in all of that. I also remember I was reading, I haven't actually gotten a chance. I've seen a bunch of like I know Johnny has tested out Sagas and there was a stream with that. But I was reading on your Kickstarter page and like there's a mention of like combat, but no math. Talk to me about Tell me about this combo with no math.
Talk dirty to me. This no math world you preach.
I'll go through like the real quick elevator pitch of what exactly Sagas is, because there's a little bit in there that that'll help explain that. So Sagas, setting and genre agnostic system, is a universal math light TTRPG designed to help easily tell your story in any world. In only 15 minutes, you can teach yourself the rules, build a character, and start playing. You can choose from over 100 features to create your player character or use the guidelines for quickly making your own unique abilities. Sagas also promotes helping allies over helping yourself. So using the smooth and fast combat rules, you can describe the epic team combos that take down the final boss. And we've done that several times now. It's so much fun. It uses a check-based roll-under resolution system, and your character features change the size of the die you roll. And your allies can help by giving you more dice to roll, improving your chances of getting the lowest number possible. So essentially, one of the earliest ideas I had is I wanted to not have as much math. In fact, we were toying with the name Mathless to start with, you know, the design. And I quickly realized that math has a very broad definition. Like telling whether one number is bigger than another is still technically math.
It is still math.
You can't use dice and not do math. So
that's true.
You know, we couldn't call it truly mathless.
It's like timetableless.
Timetableless, yeah.
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 But that doesn't really roll off the tongue.
No, I don't like it. So we ended up with Sagas, which we all love acronyms, at least on our team, we all love acronyms. So setting and genre agnostic system. And it just says exactly what the game is.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. And it's also, like you said, a good way to tell a variety of different stories, or having just the base mechanics. Because it's also, I feel like anybody that's been entered the space as like a dungeon master or a player, eventually at some point, especially as a dungeon master, I feel like either you have the hopes of starting with a module and then you throw that shit out the window because you're gonna do your own stuff anyway.
Exactly, that's what
I did. Or you just fall ass backwards into like, I blacked out and I created an entire world and now we're here. But at the end of the day, we all still need that like that skeleton of mechanics, and you just take that from whatever system it is that you're enjoying in that particular. So having something that you've already designed with the respect of like that in mind, that it can be any setting, it can be whatever, and it's giving you the bones of what you need to operate the actual system, but the story can be literally anything. And that's a really awesome thing that you did with that.
Thanks. We've told so many wildly different stories. We've done a hospital drama in the same session as like slasher steampunk horror. So that, like, one of the really, really cool things that I like to do with it is do a multiversal travel kind of game where, because literally the only difference between the worlds is how you describe them. You can switch from one world to another without changing any of the mechanics. Like, everything just moves right over and gets reflavored to fit that universe. And if you want, you can, I really enjoy giving the players the opportunity to re-describe what their characters look like in this new universe.
Is it like a Kingdom Hearts
that's
effect?
That's a lot of fun to listen them do.
Is it like a Kingdom Hearts effect?
I sadly have not played Kingdom Hearts.
No, okay, so I'll dictate it to you. So it's a game where it's a weird mishmash of both Final Fantasy and Disney.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, but it works for some reason.
But it works, and it's great, and it's like, it is one of those harebrained, like, I look like a conspiracy board theory person whenever I try to explain any of the plot. But the basics of it is, like, you're going to different, like, Disney themed worlds and questing over there. But every time you and Goofy and Donald, like, travel to that world, your whole, like, aesthetic will change according to it. So, like,
yeah,
Nightmare
yeah.
Before Christmas or Little Mermaid or whatever. So that's what that was my first, like, little harebrained thought when you mentioned, like, describing how your character has changed in this new world. I was like, oh yes, that adaptation.
Yes, yeah. Exactly like that. And we've even had fun, like, toying around with this world, doing like a sort of Into the Spider-Verse thing where this world has a completely different art style too. So the way we describe it changes. And that's so much fun. Mm-hmm.
That's where my brain went into the Spider-Verse, but I wasn't pulling into the Spider-Verse. So I was like, I'm going to have to say that one animated Spider movie that has Miles Morales in it. And I would just hope that everyone, because I'm like, that is the touchstone for me. But, like, yes, it's Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that it's great movie, by the way, both of them. And I'm excited for the third one in like 10 years or whatever.
Whenever they get around to it.
When I'm like fucking 40 or some shit like that, but I'll still be out here.
I'll still enjoy it.
Yeah. 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 I love that. Is there any, what are your most like, have you had any crazy experiences while, like, test playing it? Or are there things that you've, like, while you've test played it, like, in the process of kind of getting up to the point of fully building, like, what changes have you had to make on the fly, like, as you've tested it versus, like, where did it start and has it changed that much since you've tested it and now it's, like, fully funded?
The rules have only changed very slightly. We haven't changed any, like, big major things since it was just me at my desk rolling dice playing combat with myself. but since then we've mostly just added stuff, because, like, the base mechanic of changing the size of the die you roll and rolling low is good has been consistent throughout the whole development process. Mm-hmm. And that's been really, really nice, because changing that would be a nightmare to, like, change everything else around it. So I'm really glad that has continued to work well.
Heck yeah. And do you have any goals for it now that it's funded? Like,
yeah, make it pretty.
Make it pretty?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Most of the funds are going to be going towards, like, art, layout design, the second giant editing pass, recouping the marketing spending. But the largest chunk is going to be doing interior art.
Heck yeah. Love that.
Sorry, I was like, I muted myself because I was like, my gardener is right outside just hacking away. I was like, this cannot happen to me right now.
It's, like, it's Gardner or it's cats. And I'm, you're not, it's never, Gardner, you're never sure cats. Which.
My mom screamed my fucking name earlier, even though I just told her I was going to be recording. And I was like, Jesus, I texted her being like, hey, I'm live again. Like I told you.
She's like, this sign that Ollie has a little sign on the door where she will slide. It's like a slider to like on the air versus like off. It's very cute. Like,
woman, that's amazing. I don't like most. That.
Yeah. That's why when I'm at my parents' house, like my parents are in town, I'm like, I'm so sorry, I cannot record, because again, my mother is also the same, where she will just yell out for me, and I'm like, please, please,
please.
I live like, with no. My fiance and our cat, and fortunately, she knows when I'm recording. She'll go like play Sims for a couple hours or something. But my cat has no such respect. Mm-hmm. And I'm very surprised that he hasn't appeared yet. Over my shoulder, I've got one of his favorite spots, and he, I swear, senses when I go live, so yeah. He can hop up there on camera and immediately begin cleaning himself. And
that feels right.
Just he's just to, like, doing his very part slightly. To like raise your awareness on the internet. Yeah. He knows that cats are good for numbers.
They are.
He's just pulling weight. To be honest,
it's not a mistake that, you know, he's the channel mascot and exactly. Like our
that was his plan.
Okay, it was. We're convinced that he's not my familiar. I am his, and he's an archfey.
You're correct. You're correct in that assumption.
Yes. Right. So I have to be careful of whenever he asks me questions or things that sound like they might be questions.
Cool little Easter egg.
He has, yeah. Don't you? We can't answer him. Too dangerous.
Look him in the eye.
Cool little Easter egg. The symbol for OKSDM is a D20 with cat ears, and one of them is Snip, just like his.
Oh, wait! I love that.
That's precious. Oh my god, I'm dead.
I love that. At some point, well. I have two cats, and they're Wisp and Willow, and they're sisters, and they're a time, but I'll have to find a way to work them into something.
Yeah. Great for content.
Great for content. Yeah, absolutely. I will exploit them for the views, whatever we need to do.
Absolutely. We'll find. They'll catch them doing something, and it's like all those little, like, green screen edit shit of like the cat, like the one cat's like whirr, and the other one's just like wiggling its body. Of it's like, we'll get a Willow and Wisp version of one of those at some point.
Make them into a cap cut and go viral and then profit.
You should have recorded was it Willow or Wisp? It was like just screaming the last time we were in town for D&D.
Because she was in heat. Wisp. It was her first heat.
Yeah. We were all like,
she was a horny woman. And we were all like, yelling. Hey girl, I feel you. It's hard out here in these streets, but you are
you are
an indoor baby cat. And there will never be a man in your life. I'm so sorry to tell you.
No. It's like, you think you want to go out in the forest, you don't, I promise you.
No, these men are trash. Get out there. We've been out here.
That one mangy cat that you see out the front window is not for
he's
you.
Not, That's he's not, not your it, business. Girl. Trust me. They're a time. It's funny because I think Willow has gone through her first heat, and it's funny because Wisp is always all like really, really vocal. Willow is not. So she's very quiet. Yeah. She's very shy. And I think like her version of a heat has just been her coming up to me being like, meow. And I'm like, okay. She's just doing that more often than she used to. And I'm like, I think this is hers. Yeah. She's so polite about it. Whereas Wisp has been like rolling herself all over people and screaming.
And just screaming from the other end of the house. But it's like, is someone being murdered or is that just Wisp? Hopefully the latter.
God damn.
Hugo is into something. Very much not polite about anything. He doesn't go so far as to like knock things off of furniture, but he does about 15 to 20 minutes before my alarm goes off in the morning, I wake up to him, wow, 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 just screaming constantly. And I have to like get up, go close the door. And then that helps a little bit. And I lie back down and look over at my phone. I'm like, 3 minutes till your alarm goes off. God.
Yeah. It's like, and you know good and hell well if that alarm is going to go out. You could wait and do that in 15 minutes, but no. He's like, no, your neurodivergent ass is going to get up. You're going to have to get up and shut
right.
that door.
And it's not like he just literally he just wants attention. He gets like we have this rotating food bowl. So he knows when his food comes like 5 times a day. But he just wants attention. And I'm so tempted to just not give it to him anymore. Just like completely ignore him every morning and just see what happens.
You would have to be ready for like an Old West standoff. If he's like now an adult cat and he's become accustomed to it, like it will truly be an immovable object meets an unstoppable force trying to break a cat
it's gonna
of
be,
anything.
We're not going to have any upholstery left.
No, there won't. No one will have peace in your home. So you have to decide if it's worth that.
My fucking gardener. I'm waiting. Okay, he's gone.
He's like, let's right let you finish that bush, man.
I'm like, y'all could have done this at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah, it's like the middle of the day. Strange.
Yeah. No, I remember also like we used to play at a game where like you ever have your cat? Does Hugo ever come on the table whenever y'all are playing like at an in-person game?
He likes to wander about our feet a lot when we do in-person games, but he hasn't like jumped. He's only jumped onto the table like once.
No,
and it was very interesting. I think we have pictures somewhere.
Yeah. We used to have a situation where their cat used to like get all over the table, all over the minis and just like lay down.
Lay down.
I remember us distinctly being like in a pirate world and we're like, well, that's a Kraken for sure.
That's
like,
the monster.
Clearly.
This is just what we're doing right now.
Because like, but what he wanted Spanx. So he would get on there, he would get on the table and then we'd be like, let me spank that butt. Let me spank that butt. Let me spank that butt. And that's what he would want with like Spanx to the rhythm
to the rump
of that song. Yeah. And yeah, then he would go about his day after that.
Yeah. You had to pay homage through speech.
You truly did.
It is time to worship me. You shall do this and then I shall leave you.
Yes. Exactly.
Complete my dark ritual and you may play in peace.
My dark ritual. I also wanted to ask you, like we first met you in person at PAX. How was your PAX
experience? Yeah. It was my first like gaming convention, at least that I remember. I might have been to one when I was like in middle school or younger, but it was definitely the first one I went to like on my own. And it was amazing. When they said PAX was one of the biggest, you know, tabletop gaming conventions in the country, I was like, okay, cool, pretty big. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they meant 4 blocks of people and activities. Yeah. It was
tabletop
enormous.
Gaming. It was wild. That was my first convention ever.
Yeah.
So it
was insane. And I met you guys and so many other like amazing content creators and met up with people that I'd been talking to like and working with online for like a year. And that was super rewarding and fun.
Yeah, we had a lot of a similar experience because, yeah, same. Like, I've been to other conventions. Like, I've been to Comic-Con and I've been to, like, Anime Matsuri and, like, Houston Comic-Con.
Okay.
But, again, as, like, an attendee, not, like, this is I'm looking to network situation. Mm-hmm. I'm, like, I'm mostly here to spend money, hopefully get something signed. And that was Mariah's first con experience too. So we were, yeah, very much like zero expectations. And then we ended up meeting so many people that we either had like interacted with a lot online with or people we like admired. And it was wild to just be bebopping around and meeting such like a huge congregation of people that you've kind of like been eyeing online for so long.
Yeah. Like I've been following your social media for like 6 or more months. And it's nice to put a face to the handle.
To see you in person.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. And then we ended up going to like a lot of like kind of like creator networking. Did you ever make it to the Marriott?
Yeah, a couple times, but I was always like way earlier than the real like creator gatherings happened. I met one of the Dungeon Dudes, the one of the guys from Legends of Avantris, and I think also saw, like, got to talk to the content creator relations guy for Wizards of the Coast.
Nice.
But we always had to leave before it really got popping in there, because gotcha. I was staying an hour away, and driving all three nights was a nightmare. It was probably some of the most stressful driving I ever done, because I was in a strange car that I wasn't used to. It was
in a city
dark.
That you don't know.
Philly traffic is the worst.
Wild.
And it was foggy all three nights. So I was like, when we got out to the boonies where I was staying, I would like have to slow down as I was going over a hill, because it looks like just like a cliff, like a drop off, because I couldn't see the other side.
Yeah, you're like, cool, I'm on some Silent Hill bullshit out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It was horrifying.
Yeah, we're trying to work out like staying where we're going to stay for Gen Con. And like, apparently Indianapolis is like a base, like a very driving city, like not dissimilar to Houston, but like I've never been, so I didn't know that. And so I'm Googling things like, see, like, oh, is there anything in downtown walking distance? Kind of like what we did for PAX. And I was like, oh, this is 10 minutes away. And Ollie was like, 10 minutes walking or 10 minutes driving? And I'm like, pause, I don't know. And like on rough, like everyone else was like, no, it's driving. I'm like, cool. Yep. Great. Then yeah, we are going to be driving for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, and we're very much the same, because like we're everything, because it's two cities right next to each other that are like maybe 15 minutes apart. And so like one of those, whatever you're looking for, one of those cities is going to have it. So you're constantly like either go to St. Paul or go to Minneapolis, whatever you need is going to be there. And the suburbs just sprawl out in all directions forever.
Yeah, that's basically Houston, because we call a very large expanse of area Houston, because we know nobody's going to understand what this random suburb is called, or random, like whatever. Because I'll tell people I'm from the Woodlands, and unless you're like from here, you have no idea what that means or where that is. It's Houston. So it's a big umbrella that covers a lot of
a large swath of land.
It absolutely.
For sure. I wanted to ask too, you, because you mentioned your YouTube channel, and I know that's taken like a little bit of a step back because you've been pursuing the sagas. But what kind of mistakes are you making so that other people don't have to?
So I really only have like a couple like videos on there that really got, you know, like popped off like immediately. So when I started creating content, it was maybe 3 months into that I hit the, at the time it was 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours to get monetized. So I hit that very, very early, and then it just died immediately. And I still have not gotten to the point of making $100 in ad revenue for YouTube to send me a check. And that was over a year ago now. So
monetizing on social media is so weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah,
yeah, it's awesome.
It is. It's. I'm not gonna try to figure it out. I'll figure. You know, Patreon.
It's a strange.
Or, you know,
yeah, it's
Kickstarter.
A strange uphill battle.
Yeah.
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 But the stories I actually tell are from my own home games mostly, and they are about the mistakes that I made or things that I tried. You know, you read a lot of theory crafting on, you know, Reddit or TikTok or Instagram, and you see all this stuff and you're like, okay, that sounds like it's a really good idea, but have you actually tried it? Does it work? And more often than not, I felt like the answer to that was no. So I'm like, okay, I'll actually try these things and report back. And a lot of the stuff has worked very well. Even more has not. And I always preface, like, your table's going to be different than mine. So this is just a story about what happened when I gave it a shot. Some of the best things that have come of it are I started delegating more tasks that are normally reserved for the Dungeon Master GM. I delegated those tasks to other people at the table. So the two biggest ones are tracking initiative and tracking monster health. And how I do the monster health is I just say, okay, start, just keep track of how much damage they take. And when I think it's getting close, I'll ask you for an update.
Interesting.
And that has been a huge load off of my brain during combat. So I can focus on descriptions and monster tactics and all that sort of thing. So like delegating things to players has worked very well. It took a little while to stick, but now that it has, it's very smooth sailing.
That's interesting. I like that a lot because I feel, yeah, I feel like I'm hitting a similar stride, but more in like a role play sense. And like a couple of our last sessions, there would be elements where, I don't know, we're in a ball situation. And so I knew we were going to go do like a little shopping episode and whatever. And I was, they had kind of like free time before we went to go where the ball's going to happen, to do whatever scenes that they wanted to do, whatever preparations they wanted to make. And obviously that entails in like going to random places that like I have not thought of before we sat here at this table. So there, I did a lot of prepping for the ball itself, that there's stuff that I just didn't get to the point where I could plan. So whenever they came up with like, oh, I want to go to this chocolate tier shop because I'm going to get a gift to present or whatever. I was like, cool, tell me about this chocolate shop. Tell me about like who's working there. Give me the pitch.
Delegate so your world building to your players.
Yes. It makes so that everything I know so who much I'm about easier. To have to play, because like I, when I tell you I have not even one brain cell to spare because of everything else that I've done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's so much cognitive load going on for someone running a TTRPG.
Yeah. And it's been really, really nice because, and it's also nice because like Mariah can attest to this, and I, and our other two players can attest to this, in the sense of like this world that we've kind of, they really truly have crafted it with me, is one that we're all very equally invested in, because it is something that I've had them play a big hand in how that world has developed, who is in that world and like different areas and all of that stuff, because they've had as much of a hand in creating it. There is so much more investment there. And a lot of the best things that have come out because of them giving me stuff that I wouldn't have thought in the moment.
Yeah. Or just like pitching like, oh, here's an idea for like a secret that then spirals into something like a whole other plot line that we didn't expect to have happen. And yeah, it's just, you have a greater sense of ownership in the world because you helped create it. Like beyond just your character, because like your character is going to influence other characters and be influenced by where they came from and their location. So letting your players help you with that is really powerful, because it gets them intrinsically just more involved, and it's more fun because like you have a stake and a hand in this world that you're playing in.
Exactly. And you hit on something that I think is probably one of the most common questions that I see asked of like content creator dungeon masters, is how do I get my players more invested? And there are so many long-winded and varied answers to that question, but I think we're talking about one that is probably the easiest and most reliable. Yeah. If the more work that the players put into the world and their characters, the more invested they as players are going to be. And so it's, for me, it's been a process of like spoon feeding them like bit by bit, trying to get like, especially the ones that are just kind of like, no, I just want to show up and roll dice, man. I'm like, okay, but can you like take care of this for me and like make it something that they would be interested in? Like tell me about your character's father or their upbringing just real quick. And so I can like tie that into the world and the plot, and like bit by bit ask them for more and more and more, and the more that they give to the story, the more invested in the story that they're going to be.
For sure.
Yeah. And like, because it's really fun as a player to almost feel like you're in on some of the secrets. Like a lot of it is like, oh, the DM, like how you know they're cooking up some wild stuff to throw at you, but also like, if you can, like, I think each of us in our Strixhaven campaign, and also like for the our actual play that is a few years down the road, but, like, we've started kind of noodling around ideas with that, of like we've each kind of worked with Ale or will do to figure out the bones of the arcs for each of our characters. And so as we're going through those, and like little hints are getting dropped in game, like the DM knows, and then that player who's sort of read in knows as well. And that's really fun to have those moments where you start like teasing those secrets that the other players don't know.
Yes.
And that's really, really fun as a player. And it also helps keep it from just being on the DM to craft everything and do mm-hmm. everything yeah. all the time.
100%. It definitely helps because it's also something that I find funny that it's developed naturally on its own because of my really difficult ability or inability to keep secrets because I suck yeah. at it. And it's hard as fuck as a DM who can't hide her facial expressions and it has a terrible time lying to her friends. So they'll yeah, be like asking me questions difficult. And I'm like, I'm going to turn around in my chair and face the other direction.
I will just leave the room sometimes. I will leave talking, the room like, after because the session, I know that I can't. I'm going to, yeah. It's like, I'm going to put stuff away now.
Yeah. They'll start talking about their theories and I will just slowly turn around in my chair and like,
yes. Yeah. It's so away. Hard to keep a poker face during those conversations.
I have the hardest fucking time with it. But it is something that's developed naturally in that sense of like, okay, I need an outlet and I need my mm-hmm. players to be that outlet to an extent. So when it comes to their personal character secrets, it's kind of an iceberg effect of three levels. I'm like, there's the part of the story that all the players know. There's the part that me and that player know specifically about them. And then there's mm-hmm. all the stuff that I'm keeping from everybody because there yeah. still yep. needs to be an element of surprise for you as a player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's helped me mitigate a little bit of my, like, I need to vent. I need to go yeah. tell this to somebody.
Yeah.
Because I have the exact
same problem with my home game right now. Like, we're going to go play, we're playing a session tomorrow. And I there's so many, like, big secrets that I've thought about so much, but the players are so far away from like diving into what they actually are.
Yeah.
And like, it's going to take them forever to get there. And I'm so yeah. impatient.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm like,
they're not ready to take on the, you know, they know that the big bad is like this CR27 great worm dragon. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a long history that, you know, they're diving into. And there are so many itty bitty little pieces that they've like collected so far and they've been trying to put them together, but they don't have any of the connecting pieces yet. I just want to yeah. give it to them, but it's too soon.
I know.
Yeah, it's like, can like, I tell I you at a table and then you maybe forget by the time we get there and it'll be fine.
I wish I had like a Men in Black situation and I could just tell you everything.
Yeah, just
and
like a little pen that, okay, put on some shades and bing. And okay, like good.
Modify,
you're good to go now.
Modify memory really
modify
quick
memory and, every single yeah. time I have a conversation with you. That yeah. would be wonderful. Because, yeah, no, it's why I've like now collected just a few, like a cluster of DMs that are in like a very private section of our server for our game.
Mm.
So they get to see my Discord server for this campaign is an entire beast in and of
itself. It's wild.
It's where I do my planning. It's where I keep everything organized. So there is like a section that all the players can see. And then like there's a whole section where it's only me and the other DMs. Mm-hmm. So and they're kind mm-hmm. of like mirrors of each other. And so I have all the stuff that's already been revealed. And then I have it all sectioned off
yep.
that hasn't been revealed. And the DMs can see everything that's going on, all the OSRPs and whatever. So anytime I need brainstorm, I just go to my little DM corner and I'm like screaming into the void and the void screams back with ideas. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever, with that setup, I imagine it being like a little bit risky. Has anyone ever accidentally posted something in the wrong chat and revealed
nice
something
thing
too
is
soon?
That like the DMs that are in there know which channels are for us to talk back and forth in. Everything else is literally for my notes, my pictures, or whatever. So I'm the only one posting across like the top and the bottom half of that server.
Yeah.
They okay. always stay come in their lanes.
Always I've come close, close a couple times. Because like there was one, like there's a different server that like Ollie, myself, and our editor Kay and our friend Oak are in. And Ollie, I'm a fairly recent addition to that server, and like Ollie forgot that I was in there and started to say something, and then I posted like the emoji of like coming out of like, oh, continue. She's like, I forgot Mariah's
yeah
in
and
here.
I was like, fuck, I forgot that you just got added to like, a server like, that used to just be me and these other people.
Be prepared. Yeah. But then so I also kind of do the same thing because I like stole Oak partially for like the Vampire the Masquerade game that I run. Mm-hmm. And when I added him to that server, Ollie was freaking out. I was
like, you can't take my dungeon master from me.
And I was like, wow. Oh, how the turntables.
He's the one that I go to to make up fucked up ideas for y'all. Yeah, you can't take this man from me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's a time. I've almost slipped up sometimes when I'm like about to post something into a channel that y'all can see, and it's definitely mm-hmm. supposed to go into a planning channel. And I was like, ooh, fuck. I have fucked up one time on Threads where I posted a screenshot of a playlist that I was listening to, and the title of that was a spoiler. And then that player immediately was like, hey, girl, don't be a fucking dumbass and take this shit down. And I was like, ooh, my bad. And I took it down before Mariah or Alyssa could see it.
Was it a spoiler for the arc we're currently in?
Yes.
Damn it. let me get that post history.
Nope.
No, give me that IP address.
It's gone.
I'm trying to see it.
It was on the internet. I can find it.
Listen, right? Once it's on the internet, it's never truly gone.
Hey, I don't think anyone outside of us would have known how important that was. So
no. That's the bit. If I'm like,
it's gone. It's gone forever. But yeah, it's keeping those secrets from your players is a fucking time and a half, because there are so many times where I'm like, there are times where I have slipped up in the, it's the post session convos, the post session breakdowns that you're all like chit chatting about. And there's moments where I forget that I'm the goddamn DM and I'm not supposed to talk about some shit. And mm-hmm. like, I think I've casually like let something slip around Mariah, and she looks at me, she's like, the what now? I'm like, fucking A, I wasn't supposed catch to it. Say that.
I like mm-hmm. I was still trapped. Like I also run games. Like I'm like I can fully separate. So it's like if you accidentally tell me something, it's fine. But I do not miss when you say something in my presence. If I'm just like, what was that? What did you say?
And I'm like,
like a shark. Hopefully,
it's not
blood
been anything
water.
Huge that no. I've let slip around you. But I'm like, it does slip up, and I'm like, God fucking damn it.
Like,
yeah. My players actively try to make me do that. Like, they will have a conversation and start approaching a spoiler that they know is a spoiler, and just like let the conversation pause and see if I'd say anything by accident.
Like, sure, it'd be nice if somebody filled in this awkward silence.
Yeah, sure, it would be a shame.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I need to go like message Oak about some VTM stuff, because I have things for like Ollie's character that I've been sitting on for a little bit that I'm like,
and you need to get it off your soul.
Yeah, because I'm running that again for what is it, next Sunday, because we're not playing our Aldarn campaign, so I'm gonna run VTM. Yeah. And so I need to like actually start prepping for that and get my shit together, essentially.
Have you had any big slip ups, or what is like your favorite secret that you've ever gotten to like pull out on your characters?
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
I can see the brain churning.
Probably one of my proudest moments in all of running any TTRPG was for a very long term D&D campaign. And it was the reveal that the big bad is not just some lord. And everyone had their theories about who or what this guy actually is. And there was they went to one of his, it wasn't his, it was one of his, one of his thralls, not thralls, Jarls, his lower lords, like castles, and they went there to have dinner, and he just showed up after, like the head of the table was empty for a while, and they're like, who's this gonna be? It's totally gonna be the guy. Guess what? The guy walks in, and he's like this old tottering dude. And of course, like that was a really, really fun scene to like role play. He made some very interesting threats. There was one point where the guy that owned the castle was there and was at least thinking about joining the party against him. And the party at one point had gotten to his lab, and he had done experiments and made like draconic manticores, and they had to fight. And most of the manticores got away during that fight. And so he's like, no, don't tell him about that. That was my personal thing. So just keep a tight lid on it. And during the meal, the old guy snaps his fingers and they bring out the next course. And it is one of those manticores rotisseried. And he said some like searing line about don't fucking cross me again. And it just escalated from there, getting more and more tense. And eventually one of the party members snapped and like attacked and combat started. We got through a couple rounds and but the part that was the best by far is like I had practiced a little, I had practiced like this speech that he was going to give out and descriptions as he was transforming to music, like paced to this like snippet of a song. And it was the Tchaikovsky's Firebird Suite from what is it? The Fantasia 2000.
Fantasia. Played that in band. I was a band kid in high school, and that was
one. I love so good. When that song starts to get dark is like that little snippet that I played as he's transforming into this like dark shadow being, half dragon, half eldritch horror. And he just like wrecked all the NPCs in the room and then left. Because he was like, he's like, this is too soon. I'm not ready. And he just got out of there. And the party was like, okay, we need to fucking bolt. But that moment of his transformation was definitely one of like, I practiced that shit and it paid off.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things to do too, is to find like good music that I have a very specific scene for. And then... Mm-hmm. Picturing and practicing how I'm going to paint that out timed to like the music and stuff, because it just adds the je ne sais quoi good shit into it.
It makes the whole thing just like 10 levels more cinematic.
Yeah, I feel like it also like ingrains that song in your brain forever with like that specific scene in mind, so you can't listen to it without like flashing back to that memory. And that's what I love about it.
Sometimes. I can't watch Fantasia 2000 anymore without thinking about that transformation.
I think for me, what's hard is my favorite secret that I'm getting over all of you is happening currently. Because
I hate that you just said that. Because
I'm laying the groundworks and I'm placing hints, but what I'm loving so far, and I've already mentioned this to Mariah, is that even the player that is in on the secret has not caught on that it's happening actively right now.
Yeah, apparently, because like last time you were in town, we were talking about it very vaguely, and you were like, because it's like it's a ball, and there's a male character, an NPC that's like getting engaged, but he doesn't want to get engaged, and so like part of the thing is there's been this like Ocean's 11-esque like background spy plan to try to like tarnish his good name, so he gets rejected, and like he's my character's ex, and so there's drama there. And like we were Ollie and I were talking about it when you were in town last, and I was like, you know, the like bleeding heart in me just wants like everyone to be happy and end up fine, and I'm like, I don't think that there's a way that that's gonna happen, not really. And Ollie's like, I don't know, there's something else on the table. I'm like, what do you mean by that? And like, I was going through what I was aware of, and she's like, yeah, and there's something else. And I'm like, what does that mean? And it's so, it's such a mind fuck, because it's like a sociopolitical, like very powerful, like Malfoy-esque family. And like my arc was fucked up, but it was fucked up in a traditional way, in the sense of like my character has been something really traumatic, and she like was killed and resurrected, and her parents were turned into a monster. And so like it was very body horror forward. You know, it's like you kind of know what you're getting into a little bit, where it's like, oh, we're going to go down in the dungeon and we're going to find the horrible thing. And like there was stuff that surprised me and certainly the other players, but it felt like we weren't just walking out into the abyss, if that makes sense. So it's like, I kind of know what this is, right? I've kind of consumed. I have no fucking idea what the twist.
Now that it's not your art and you're out here blind, it's not sucks. So comfy.
It's
is
bad.
It?
It's a bad place to be, because I'm like, what in the blue hell is going to happen? at that, like, because the ball's kicking it off, but then it's like, we still have a whole year of school. And I'm like, I know there's stuff that's gonna, like, it's an arc. I know there's things that we're building to. Mm-hmm. Like, what in the fuck are we building to? I don't know. I have no idea. And neither does anyone else.
I don't know. Don't ask little old me. Yeah, I wouldn't like, know anything about that.
It's brutal out here.
I'm like, don't look at him. Look at me. You ain't going to get any help from
him. Don't look at him.
Yeah, it's been really good. It's also like, this is the first time I've ever been a DM is for this campaign. Yeah, because we started literally a year ago.
Okay.
And so I've learned a lot.
Your first campaign has lasted a year. That's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy with it. Cause we left our old game, and then, it was, that person was our GM, and we were all players, and none of us had ever GM'd before. So then I happened to be the one that had like a bunch of source books and was willing to do it. So I took it up. And I've been learning and adjusting and like getting a lot of feedback from them the whole time, which has been really nice. And it's felt like a very safe space to do it. Cause before it was so intimidating. And I think a large part of that had to do with the person that was coming before us.
Oh yeah. Same for me. There's no way I would have felt the safe or comfy, like running a game in that previous situation. Mm. Like, absolute on a cold day in hell would I have done that? No, absolutely not.
Yeah. But this has been a nice, like, safe space to kind of really explore that and, like, learn from that. And so there's been moments where I'm like, oh, I could have done that better. Or, like, the traditional, like, I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and realize that there are things that were left unsaid that should have been said in a certain moment or something.
Mm. But I think I'm getting better. Later. We don't care. Like,
I'll retcon stuff if I need to retcon and just tell y'all that like that conversation would have had a different outcome.
Yeah. Give us a little mid-month snack in between sessions.
Mid-month snack in between. But it's nice because I feel like I hit my stride with my biggest insecurity the first year was combat or running combat. And then by the time that I got to Mariah's like end of her arc, I feel like I did good in creating a combat that wasn't just challenging but also like engaging, if that makes sense.
It was it was really, really good. It wasn't just like whack it till it stops moving. Like there was elements of that, which is there's something fun about that. Like I play a paladin, I like a divine smite just hits but you don't want it to be only that, right? And it was still very interwoven in the story, and it felt like everything we were doing in the combat had consequences. And it's like, oh, if this person gets away, that's going to drastically affect what the next two rooms are like, or like if we choose to go in this room versus that room, or we break in here or versus keep going. Yeah, it's like everything had stakes because the order in which we discovered things mattered a lot.
Yeah. And that is one of the, I'm going to turn the conversation back to sagas, and I promise it's relevant.
Yeah, please go for it.
Absolutely.
I agree. That is one of the hardest things to do as a GM or DM is make combat interesting and not just stand and swing. Like you said, Mariah, hit it until it stops moving. Just keep doing that. And sometimes even after it stops moving, just in case.
Just one more. Just double tap it real quick, just to be sure.
Yeah. Like it still has its head, right? Let's fix that.
Can't be too careful in these streets.
And balancing interesting combat and making it like figuring out what the appropriate challenge rating is and versus how strong the players are is fucking impossible. It's so hard.
Yeah.
And like not only that, but go into game design and figure out how to create a tool to help do that impossible task that needs to be done is even harder. And I see posts out the wazoo for how difficult, like how bad and broken the fifth edition encounter calculator is. And now that I've tried to do it myself for my own game, I have so much respect that they tried. You know, it's so hard. Like even just calculating like a stand and swing combat where everyone targets, you know, the weakest person, and you can. I actually was on a call with my cousin who has a PhD in math from Berkeley, and he was basically helping me walk through like how to calculate, you know, the difficulty of this thing and make this tool.
Yeah.
And he like made a program for it that ran a couple, you know, 10,000 permutations of combats with varying levels of monsters and players. And even with that data, it was like, it's not balanced. I can't make it balance. I've tried so hard.
And it's also, I think the element that it misses is that just because you're telling it, hey, these are three level six players, characters, whatever. Mm-hmm. It is not accounting for the chance of them not hitting a bunch of times, or they do hit a bunch of times and they crit and they're whatever. But also the element of like, how good are they at playing the specific characters that they are? Or like,
what are they playing? Is it 6 monks? Or like 6 Gloomstalker Rangers? Or is it 6 wizards? Yeah. Because, like, that's going to be drastically different, you know, whatever combination. And also how much people have played. Do they play optimized as far as their characters go? Yeah. Or
exactly.
Are they just kind of wheeling and dealing?
Yeah. On top of also, like, I can say, like, the person that I was when I first started playing D&D, trash at combat. I didn't know how to play any of my classes. I remember, like, the first time I was playing an assassin again? Rogue.
How does that work?
Yeah, I was playing an assassin rogue, and I did dick all on my first turn when I was the first person on initiative.
Truly.
And
It's brutal out here.
It's brutal.
It took me way longer than I'd like to admit.
Versus the people that we are now, the four of us can show up at anybody's table, and if they tell us we're about to run combat, we know how to run that shit. And I'm very proud of us at this point because we've had that experience with the DM who's like, I'm going to go hard. I'm going to be shooting to kill. And we're like, okay. But we showed up with our fucking A game and destroyed his shit. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it was hard. It was hard.
It was wrong.
But we were like, by the end of it, the fact that we all were standing was phenomenal. Was
insane. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And worked so well together. I remember just like sitting back and watching us do it. And I was like, this is the first time I feel like we've all like had that moment of like, we're good at
combat. Yeah.
Like,
we all have a section of the brain cell.
I was very proud of us.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to account for that, like, in a calculator type
vibe. There's way too many variables. Way too much.
We'll even look at it, like, with, like, Baldur's Gate, right? Where you can do things, right? Sometimes you'll go through, like, a boss fight or an encounter, and you'll fly through it. And because, like, you're the initiative rolled well, or, like, you happen to hit everything, the boss happened to miss a lot. Like, you know. And then other times, like, you'll go do that fight again on another playthrough, and you're all confident and boisterous, like, this is going to be a great time. And you get absolutely millirocked. And you're like, I'm sorry, what happened? Did they change it? Does he have twice the HP? No, it's just the variables
rolled, like,
are
dick
different.
That time.
And it's so weird, and, like, it's really cool because it adds a lot of, like, replayability, and it keeps everything fresh. But, like,
it really does.
Remember there was that one fight in the Shadowfell where it's like shambling mounds, which, like, me, Mariah, and my characters, like, we have so much PTSD around, like, plant-based enemies, like shambling mounds, corpse flowers, like, it's our whole, like, party now, because, like, they were in our Ravenloft game, like, it's brutal out here. I don't want a plant. If a plant starts walking, I'm like, can we just go? Can we just leave, please?
Can we leave?
Can we not? And I was like, there's that one shambling mound fight, and, like, those shambling mounds absolutely slaughtered me at, like, level 8. And then I came back and tried it again, and it was fine. And I'm like, why? What happened this day?
Mm-hmm.
What has occurred on the steps of Notre Dame?
Exactly. Sometimes you don't even know what the variable was.
Yeah.
Like, it's truly impossible to
figure out. I felt super good in Baldur's Gate up until I got to the Astral Monks, because I'm like, I had a great dandy old time with literally everything, including the boss fights. I mean, they were difficult, but I was like, I'm good, I'm chilling. But it does run you through that, like, marathon of, like, once you start getting to the towers, and then you gotta defeat I forgot his name, the old guy, and his death god and shit. And then it runs you through all of that and then straight into that fight with the astral monks. And that the astral monks rocked my shit.
I had to go back and replay like half of my first playthrough because I skipped too many things accidentally and I was underleveled. And I tried it and then I was like, I cannot beat this. And then when I came back at the correct level, it was like weirdly simple, which I was like, I think it's just I got lucky with the order and hitting and things.
But I wasn't underleveled. I don't know what the fuck I was doing. Maybe I had the wrong party members in my squad. I don't know. But I kept getting my shit rocked and I tried it like about four times or something. And then eventually I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to save scum until this goddamn telekinesis scroll works. And then I'm going to yeat them off the island.
Oh, but I saved scum strat. My way through it. Like every time I kill the monk, I save. I live and die by save scumming in Baldur's Gate 3 and I do not care. Yep. I have no remorse. Yep. I never claimed to be good at video games.
It's in your toolkit. Why not fucking use it?
Here for a good time.
It's supposed to be fun.
God, that's amazing. Well, it is looking like we're coming up on time. But this has been amazing, Dennis. Thank you so much for coming on. And I'm so happy that you got your Kickstarter funded. And I can't wait.
It's so sick.
I want to see the pretty sagas. I want to see the art. I want to see all the good shit. I'm so excited.
It's going to look so good. Our artist is amazing.
Oh, my God. After this, you need to send me the artist because I'm a hoe for following artists.
Yeah,
I'll just tell it. No problem plugging my boy Rook Zero. He has a YouTube channel where he twice a week he does line drawings of character art from chat, and like they just suggest, and he does like three or four of these each time he streams. So that's like six or seven a week, and he's been doing that for years. So he has this huge backlog of just line drawings of characters that he has saved somewhere. And he, when he's done, he posts them on a channel in his Discord server. So I'm scrolling through that and I'm like, dude, can I like pull from these as placeholders for our book? And he's like, yeah, 100% do it.
That's awesome.
Like, can I has burger, please? Like, are these here? It's just laying here?
For free?
They're so good too, like even the first iteration, and now I'm going to be able to pay him to like fix them up and colorize them. It's going to be amazing.
That's going to be awesome. Hell yeah. Well, give the people one more time who you are and where they can find you, and any exciting projects that you have coming up.
Well, I am Dennis. You can find me all over the internet at okayist_DM. Sometimes I'm live on my YouTube channel, okayistdm. And I am working on Sagas, Setting and Genre Agnostic System, which is going to be hopefully available on DriveThruRPG about a year from now. So January, February in 2025. If things stay on track, we'll see. This is my first game and first Kickstarter, so I'm flying by the seat of my pants here.
Nice. You're doing great.
As we all do. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you all for listening to another episode of Table Talk, and we'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Table Talk is a podcast brought to you by Mythos Media Productions, bringing you a new episode every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcast. Find us on Instagram and TikTok at TableTalkRPG, or check us out at our website, mythosmediaproductions.godaddysites.com. All business inquiries can reach out to us via email at info@mythosmediaproductions.com.